age-old tactic used by U.S. administrations to keep Israel happy. Give it more weapons with no questions asked. At a time when Netanyahu has all but ensured the U.S. brokered two-state solution is dead, this rewarding of Israel makes little sense, as Washington still stands by the two-state solution as its policy. With Israelis continually playing the victim card at every step, the U.S. establishment is only too happy to oblige and temporarily subdue the regime's hue and cries. In this edition of the debate, we'll discuss the F-35 delivery to Israel in the context of an ever-growing U.S. military aid to Israel.
The U.S. vice president has promised Israel the delivery of F-35 fighter jets, which are the United States' finest. Speaking at the Israeli embassy in Washington, Joe Biden reaffirmed his country's commitment to defending Israel. The delivery of the fifth-generation stealth aircraft would make Israel the only possessor of such sophisticated fighter jets in the region. Biden also acknowledged that the Obama administration, along with Congress, had provided Israel with military assistance and cutting-edge weapons worth $20 billion to maintain what he called its advantage against any opponent.
Even though it's described as Israel buying it from the United States, in reality, American taxpayers give Israel approximately $10 million per day of our tax money. And then with that, it, quote, buys weaponry from U.S. companies. It also buys weaponry from other countries.
According to a recent report by the U.S. Congress, Israel has been by far the largest recipient of American aid since the end of World War II. The U.S. military aid to Israel, provided by taxpayers' money, has exceeded $100 billion since the funding began in 1962. Tel Aviv also continues to annually receive $3 billion from Washington in military aid.
Democratic congressman from Washington State, a very progressive state, has introduced legislation to give Israel over $286 million more dollars on top of the amount of money it already gets.
That's besides the additional money being allocated for projects both sides benefit from. Many analysts have said that providing Israel with cutting-edge weapons is meant to reassure Israel, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been angered by a possible nuclear deal between Iran and the P5+1 group of countries. Many others, however, believe the delivery of such weapons is a sign of Washington's lack of commitment to the U.S. brokered two-state solution between Israelis and the Palestinians. They argue that most U.S.-made weapons delivered to Israel have been used against Palestinian civilians who've been fighting for their legal rights for decades. The U.S., Israel's staunchest ally, has so far vetoed all U.N. Security Council resolutions addressing the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinians. It's also kept silent on Tel Aviv's war crimes, including its deadly wars on Gaza, despite international condemnation. The United Nations General Assembly has, however, adopted a number of resolutions saying that the strategic relationship with the United States encourages Israel to pursue aggressive and expansionist policies and practices. Experts say Tel Aviv is unlikely to change those policies unless it's held accountable for the war crimes it's committed in the region.
Let me now introduce our guest for this edition of the debate. We're joined by historian and political commentator, Mr. Peter Rushton, who is joining us live from London. And we're also joined by the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb, who is joining us live from Washington. Gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us for this edition of the debate. Mr. Korb, I'd like to start with you. As a way of apparently easing tensions, the U.S. has promised Israel the delivery of these F-35s to maintain, quote, its military edge. How do you feel about this?
Well, actually, this is not new. Israel became a partner in the F-35 program back in 2003. And basically what's happened is Israel, there's 10 other countries, for example, including Turkey, who are also getting these because they help to pay for the development. Vice President Biden announced it yesterday, but the deal has already been, this is not new. People who've been following this know about it. They'll be getting there next year, the first couple, and the remainder will be going up until 2021. So I'm not surprised. I think a lot of people saw this. I think is more important than it was. The fact of the matter is, as I say, Israel has been a partner in this and put up some of their money, as did the 10 other countries going back to 2003.
Very well. Mr. Rushton, I wanted to get your thoughts on this too, the announcement of the delivery of the S-35s.
Yes, well, of course, the fact that in one sense this isn't new just underlines part of the scale of the problem, doesn't it? Because this is something that dates back originally to the Bush administration. American voters might have thought that when they were voting for Barack Obama, they were getting at least a slightly different perspective on the Middle East, but it was just business as usual. The change from Bush to Obama was just business as usual, and the real business of continuing to supply an increasingly aggressive Israeli government with these state-of-the-art weapons continued uninterrupted. So much for democratic change in the United States, and so much for people who might have thought that they were choosing a different foreign policy at the ballot box. But of course, what's most worrying about this is that this program to supply state-of-the-art weaponry has continued uninterrupted despite a decade in which Israel has been pursuing an unparalleled policy of aggression, and despite nuclear proliferation and new nuclear deals, despite the fact that Israel continues to be not only the most aggressive government in the region, but the one government in the region that possesses nuclear weapons. Now, if there was ever going to be any leverage used to try to tame the behavior of the Netanyahu government, this type of deal, although it's been being talked about and been under development for so long, this type of deal was the type of thing that would have given the Obama administration leverage of some kind. They clearly, rather than choosing to use any leverage just to moderate Netanyahu's behavior slightly, what the Obama government has chosen to do today is to go out of its way to assure Netanyahu that it's business as usual, and that the US administration's backing for his government is completely uninterrupted and unaffected by any policy that Netanyahu might have chosen to pursue. That, in a way, is the most disturbing thing. One wonders, just what does Israel have to do to give any American government, Republican or Democratic, any American administration, pause for thought? Just how bad does Israel's behavior have to be before there's any pause for thought in Washington or any thought of using the leverage that such an arms deal gives them?
Indeed, I wanted to pick up on that mention of the pause for thought, Mr. Korb, and put that to you. You know, it's interesting, when Biden was announcing this delivery of the F-35s, he was at the Israeli embassy in the U.S., and when he mentioned the delivery of the F-35s, he was applauded. But then he went on to mention the two-state solution, and there was silence from the crowd. Is that not symbolic of where we stand right now when it comes to Israel?
Well, there's no doubt about the fact, and President Obama has made it clear when Prime Minister Netanyahu in his re-election talked about, you know, there wouldn't be a two-state solution while he was in office. President Obama expressed his displeasure at that. And I think it's important, they're not just giving arms to Israel there. The amount of arms that we give to Israel is determined by the agreement between President Carter and the Israelis and the Egyptians back when they had the Camp David Accords. And it's, we give the money to Israel to allow them to buy it. We also do it with Egypt. We just resumed arms shipments to Egypt. Sell a lot of arms to Saudi Arabia, which is the largest buyer of arms in that part of the world. And as I mentioned, Turkey, and people are not happy with Turkey's policies, some of the things they're doing, particularly about the situation with the Armenians, where we're selling them there. So we do have conflicting interests in the region. And when Vice President Biden announced it, that was nothing new. This deal's already been signed. And I think the important thing is he did mention the fact that we're not happy with the two-state solution.
Mr. Korb, I wanted to push you on a point that you made there. Talking about, yes, that there is military arms being sold to other countries in the region as well, but no other country gets the terminology which Israel gets. Biden specifically said these F-35s are being provided because America wants Israel to always have a military edge in the region. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, Israel has been attacked a number of times, going back to 1967, and the 73 war. In fact, in the 73 war, the attack and not to launch a preemptive attack, and that's basically what we want to ensure, that none of the countries surrounding it, many of whom don't even recognize Israel's right to exist, don't want to take military advantage. I mean, the equipment before this F-35 deal, we sold them the Iron Dome system to prevent the rockets that were launched against Israel from causing civilian damage. And we do want them to maintain the edge because they have not been aggressive in terms of, attacking other countries like they have been attacked.
Okay, I just want to take a quick time out and go to some of our viewer comments as posted on our social media. And we'll be right back with our guests right after. Listen to that.
Thanks for pissing away my tax dollars to a foreign nation. Why do we continue to let this happen? That shows the double standard of the U.S. It has issues with defense missile system given to Iran, but now gives fighter jets to the apartheid state of Israel. Now, there is nobody in the world complaining about the U.S. shipping F-35 jets to Israel, but let Russia talk of the same, you will hear the same U.S. and Israeli barking. As long as they keep Mr. Netanyahu on a short leash, that will be okay. Great news, no enemy against Israel shall prosper. This in itself is a crime against humanity. Obviously, this deadly machine will be used to slaughter innocent Palestinians until they leave their own land to the brutal Jewish colonialist state. Stop supporting this apartheid regime. Gearing up for a fight with Iran. Is this the real face of Obama? Not the one which criticizes Zionism in public? So they can keep murdering Palestinian kids and the U.S. will block any resolution against its ally, the Zionist Israel.
Just some of our viewer comments. I now want to go to Mr. Rushton. And Mr. Rushton, I wanted to ask you about this talk of military edge. And something else that Mr. Korb there mentioned, that yes, it does seem like a confusing strategy on the part of the U.S. when it's selling arms to so many in the region.
Yes, well, of course, arms have been sold right across the region to try to gain influence for the U.S. with other powers, and of course to make profits for U.S. Arms manufacturers. But there's no doubt, and Joe Biden went out of his way today to stress repeatedly that it was the U.S. policy to ensure that Israel always had a technological edge, a technological advantage. And the question is, why and when did it become American policy to do this? And why and when did it become American policy also to tolerate the fact that we talk about other countries in the region and what other countries get? There's one big difference, isn't there, between Israel and the other countries in the region. Israel might not like us to talk about it, but Israel is the one country in the region that possesses nuclear weapons and has possessed nuclear weapons for quite some time. Now, in relation to this particular deal with the jets, I think it's extremely important to remember and interesting to remember this deal is to do with the F-35s, with a much earlier generation of jet fighters from the same American manufacturer, the Lockheed F-4s. If you go back to 1969, there are actually papers that we can now read, papers from the Nixon administration that we can now read in 1969, when the Pentagon and the White House were discussing the Israeli nuclear weapons program, and the Pentagon at that time stressed to the White House that they felt that Israel possessing nuclear weapons was not in America's national interest. and said to Nixon's White House that the American administration ought to use the leverage that they had with what was then a deal similar to the current deal for the F-35s, what was then a deal for F-4 Phantom jets, to say we should use this leverage that we have and say we will delay or cancel the deal to supply the F-4 Phantoms unless Israel signs up to some form of nuclear non-proliferation treaty, unless Israel agrees to back away from its nuclear weapons program. Now, that was the stance that the Pentagon took in its own internal communications with the White House in 1969. What I wonder is, why and when was that policy reversed? And did that the reversal of that policy have anything to do with pressure that was brought to bear at that time by Golda Meir on the Nixon administration that had everything to do with domestic American politics and the power of the Israeli lobby over American politicians? Isn't that what we're talking about here? Not a responsible foreign policy, not a responsible foreign policy for the good of the region as a whole and for the stabilization of the region as a whole, but a willingness to support even an ultra-aggressive Israeli government such as Netanyahu's, a government, a prime minister in Israel, who has made no secret of the fact that he's prepared, for even for his own political reasons in Israel, to cozy up to the most extreme Zionists in Israel, to pursue the most extreme aggressive agenda, and of course to continue pursuing this policy of ignoring, totally ignoring, nuclear non-proliferation treaties, totally ignoring any thought of progress towards a two-state solution. And yet, the Obama administration, like the Bush administration before it, even when it has potential leverage to use to put pressure on Netanyahu, doesn't use it. In fact, goes out of its way to say to Netanyahu, don't worry, we are behind you 100%, and we are behind you 100% in giving you a technological edge. Isn't the
Mr. Russian, if you allow
that,
me, I wanted to speak about that,
to do with American,
that edge that
American
you mentioned there.
Domestic
I do apologize
politics.
For interrupting you. We're just running out of time, so I want to go to Mr. Korb. Mr. Korb, you know, when we talk about this edge and the Israel-America relationship, you know, the total U.S. aid to Israel since 1962, even, you know, approximates which are very low, are up to $100 billion. Since 1962, U.S. aid to Israel has been upwards of $100 billion. Yet, with such dependency on the U.S., seeming dependency, the rhetoric from Israel is interesting. I was reading an article today about Moshe Ahrens. He was a former military official in Israel, and he said that Israel is more independent than ever. If true, then why does Israel need all this military help then?
Well, again, we have, as I say, they got into helping develop the F-35 back in 2003, and the F-35 is a follow-on to the F-4 and the F-16 and now the F-35. I mean, basically, they're just trying to keep up. By the way, that's not the most sophisticated American aircraft. The most sophisticated one is the F-22, which we are not selling to Israel. That's much more sophisticated than the F-35. And again, you want to ensure that you have deterrence in the region. I have no doubt that within a couple of years, the Saudis will probably get it. And if you don't get the American version of this, they can buy Russian planes, they can buy European planes, and we're talking about the arms sales to that part of the world. The Soviet, you know, Russia has now agreed to sell air defense missiles, you know, to Iran, the S-300, which they put on hold for a couple of years. But we are committed as a country to maintain the territorial and the independence of Israel, which, you know, as I mentioned, in 67 and 73, the countries in the region tried to undermine. But we haven't changed our policy on, you know, the two-state solution. And there have been times when we've cut off aid. The administration of the first President Bush cut off loan guarantees when they were not happy with the settlements process. But the aid that goes now is to Israel and Egypt as a result of the Camp David Accords, which really toned down the violence in that part of the world.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left, gentlemen. Mr. Russian, I wanted to get your concluding remarks based on this question. You know, a September 2014 Google Consumer Survey found that 61% of Americans said that the U.S. gives too much aid to Israel. Now, in a democracy such as the United States, why then, you know, Mr. Korb there says that the country of America stands behind Israel. I'm wondering, though, it doesn't really seem that way when we see such polls.
Well, that is the one big change in recent years, that not only in America but throughout the Western world, ordinary voters, the perception of ordinary voters, has begun to shift quite significantly against Israel. But unfortunately, we might think in a democracy that votes talk, that people talk, but also money talks, and particularly money that's being wielded by extremely experienced and ruthless political operators. And that's effectively what we see in the United States today, that with the Republicans having taken control of Congress, with a presidential election due next year, Joe Biden himself, of course, making this announcement today, might well consider himself to be a candidate. And I'm sure if any health reason or any other reason were to mean that Hillary Clinton wasn't in the running, Joe Biden might be the candidate that the Israeli lobby might choose among the Democratic field. All of these sorts of considerations come into play. And as far from there being any consideration of balance in the Middle East and of a responsibility to the people of the Middle East, you end up with uncritical American support for an increasingly aggressive Israeli government that is the one government in the region that invades its neighbours, the government in the region that terrorises people within its borders, and the one government in the region, of course, that has nuclear weapons. So much for concern about balance, so much for concern about non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. The US position, even a position that, as I said a moment ago, a position that in 1969 the Pentagon was privately saying that America should not tolerate a unilateral Israeli armament of itself with nuclear weapons and should use leverage against it. Far from doing that, you have uncritical support for Israel, primarily.
Okay, I do apologize for interrupting you, Mr. Russian. Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there for now. Of course, we'll try to continue this discussion when we can with you gentlemen later on. But of course, we do appreciate both of your contributions. That was historian and political commentator, Mr. Peter Rushton, who had been speaking to us live from London. And we were also joined by the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb, who had been speaking to us live from Washington. And of course, viewers, we do appreciate your comments as posted on our social media pages. And of course, for watching. Until next time, good night.
Henry Kissinger convinced Israel to actually wait until